You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Guidepost. Tony here. And do we have a special, cool podcast for y'all today? We have two of the normal cast of characters, Bailey and Ty, on here. But we are joined by a special guest, Representative Orgeron, a state legislator from Louisiana, and vice chair of the House Natural Resources Committee, as well as an elected official who has their eye on a lot of fisheries issues. And after our last Louisiana podcast, Representative Orgeron contacted us and said, "Hey, I'd like to be a guest. Let's go." And I said, "You tell me the day and time and we'll go." So Bailey and Ty, thanks for joining me. It's pretty funny. Ty's in his car, so his kids don't run in and bum rush him. And I think Bailey may be in the kitchen of his lodge trying to get dinner ready for his clients. And Representative Orgeron, thank you so much for reaching out. And we're glad that you could join us. I hope everything's going well for you down there.
It is. We're in the middle of a session right now. And today would have been the day that I would have been asked to go play golf with Republican donor sponsors, but I did not get a single request in my 6 years. This is the first time. And I opted to go to the Finfish Task Force, where I saw Ty earlier today.
The Finfish Task Force meeting. Ty, you've been trying to get on that for a month of Sundays.
Yeah, I apply just about every month, but
you tag Waffle House like on Instagram. Yeah.
I try to go to as many as I can, but you know, it's made up of a lot of different people. It's a good thing. It's just another, you know, branch of the tree that things go through in Louisiana. And I don't know, I feel like over the past decade, there's a group of people that are like-minded like me that aren't as represented on that board as what I'd like to see. So maybe one day I'll get an email back. But I appreciate, you know, I went today and was able to talk. And that's one thing I always tell everybody about all these meetings in Louisiana, man. I hate when people run their mouth and talk about they don't listen to us, but we always got our chance to speak at pretty much everything. So,
I'm all the ones I've been to, Ty has been at. So whatever he says, he tries to make as many as he can. There's no BS in there. He's there. And I tell him when I see him, how much I appreciate him coming to him. So.
Ty participates. I'll tell you that much. He puts his time into participating. So Representative Orgeron, you reached out to us. You know, we were happy to kind of provide you this forum. And if you want, just out of respect for you, elected official in Louisiana, if you want to kick it off on anything that, you know, the main push points of why you wanted to hop on the podcast, I can kind of turn it over to you and when we can kick this off.
Not a problem. I listened to I think maybe minutes after y'all last episode 202 dropped, or 201, I guess, after whatever one was the last one, 201 dropped, someone sent me a link to it, and I just so happened to be driving home, so I listened to it on the way home, and I was quite entertained. I was impressed that y'all got a lot of things right, put it that way. Sounded like a Dr. J Bashathon for a while. It was back and forth, you know. Hey, no problem. I'm kind of flattered, you know.
Representative Orgeron, all of us have nicknames, and I promise you we only give nicknames to the people we love.
That's it.
Yeah, so, I think I have more than most on with ASGA that mostly are around Sasquatch or Chewy, so.
Not a problem. Well, just, you know, I've gotten into some controversial other things that y'all probably wouldn't know about and just, like, glossed over, like, white and bread milk, like, nobody sees me or even cares to say anything negative about me. So I was a little honored to be listening to the guideposts and be able to hear y'all going after it. And I just figured it would be, you know, let's keep the momentum rolling. Let's try to, or give me a chance to quote correct the record wherever necessary and possible amongst the plethora of, I mean, y'all talked about very many different things, the history of Menhaden. I think Ty even went into stuff pre me being involved in the legislature, all the way through the HCR5 on the redfish permit, you know, and all, so all
you
the
were
things.
You were special election 2020, and then correct. Reelected 2023. So you're, correct. I mean, you're in the terms of Louisiana, you know, you're not new, but not like a veteran, like some people you're sitting next to.
No, I was sent off to college with the edict of you can't be a lawyer and you cannot be a politician. Now go and do whatever else you want. We'll pay for it, but you can't be those two. So, and I'm not a lawyer. So, either, but my representative passed away from COVID. So that's basically how I got involved in the legislation. A special election. Nonetheless, let's get back to fisheries because that's why we're here. That's what we all love, right? So early on, I did get immediately involved in the Menhaden industry. In a earlier lifetime, I was a private pilot, so getting my hours and all, and I would meet all of the spotter pilots for the Menhaden industry. Thought it was a pretty cool job. Always asked them where they were flying. It always seemed that they were flying to me whenever I would ever see them or talk to them. It was always not near the beach. It was always off, like, you know, a mile, 3 miles, 5 miles. They were always out a little bit. And then as I got into the legislature, you know, it was brought up to me as, have you noticed where they're now catching all the menhaden at? And no, I really haven't been paying attention. And it's basically, well, it's a frontal assault right near the beach. And that's pretty much how I got involved in it. And of course, a 1 mile buffer was the very first one as a proxy to some amount of water depth. And that's somewhere where I'm going to get with Ty in a little bit. You know, the why the bycatch argument, why not the fishing gear argument. If you remember your episode 201, that Ty got into that pretty significant. But Ty, if you look at the bill H55, HB55, you'll see, just pull it up, the text of it, and search Menhaden, and you'll see that you get zero hits on it. And what you got to find is that the whole bill is basically based on gear type and, you know, proper use of gear type to make sure that it's in a certain water depth. So I'm not exactly sure. Go ahead.
No, that was my whole thing with it, you know, and I understand that. That's why, you know, I mean, I spoke in favor of that bill, 855. And, you know, that's one of the ones the Menhaden group oppose. And that was my thing with it, was not so much, you know, by using the gear correctly, it will in turn save more, you know, less bycatch, save more redfish. And that was kind of my thing with it. I just felt some of the back and forth between the panel and some of the other speakers, it just seemed like more so, hey, they're killing too many bull reds, you know, yada, yada. Whereas I would like to see it be more, they're not using the gear correctly. And maybe that's something that we got to educate the legislature more towards, because it seemed like some of those legislators don't understand how that gear works either.
Well, I'll jump in here real quick as far as like using the gear correctly. You know, they I think any commercial fishery that has the Marine Stewardship Council seal of sustainability touts that, but it doesn't take long to go on the MSC site, and they detail purse seines. And the whole reason why purse seines exist is so the predatory non-target species can escape from the bottom. So if that, you know, those sash weights, everything, if they're making contact with the ocean floor, or in this case, the Gulf floor, you're not mitigating bycatch and you're not using the gear correctly. So that was, that may have even come from me and pounding it and saying it over and over again to Bailey and Ty.
No, and because even
that's
so,
that's a huge issue in the Atlantic. It's an enormous issue in the Atlantic. And I got to look at my calendar, but I think it's tomorrow or at the latest Wednesday, we'll have the Menhaden hearing at ASMFC. And we're looking at cutting the bay cap, how much they can catch in the bay. And I think that's really relevant to your legislation for the 22 feet, because it's a 51,000 metric ton cap on bay harvest. And after that, every other state besides Virginia has banned these operations in state water. So the fleet has an option to either catch them against the beach in Virginia, or if they go up anywhere north of Maryland, they're 3 miles off the coast. So, you know, we're living it. And that's why we supported the bill, to be honest with you, because at least, at the very least, the nets will be functioning in the correct manner.
What was the decision made at the end of October of last year that, you know, I heard it as the 20% reduction for 2026. Was that not in the B cap, or that was like an overall cap, or?
So, no. Representative Orgeron, I'm sure you'll appreciate this. When an entity only catches 78% of their quota and they get a 20% reduction, they can still catch 2% more. So, it was a stock assessment issue. And like I said, the ocean cap and the bay cap are wholly separate. So, in other words, if we reduce the bay cap, that is not automatically transferred to the ocean cap. It's just a conservation win. So there was a problem with the stock assessment. They had an issue with the age of Menhaden that inflated the amount of Menhaden that we thought were in the stock. So with that stock assessment problem and us fixing the stock assessment, we should have taken a 50% reduction. And the reason why we took a 20% reduction is they only caught 78% of their quota, and ASMFC frankly sucks. And they'll never do like the hard thing. So what they did was they took a 20% because no change, right? No change. Standard operating procedure. Let's move on. So that was,
so the
it was 20% a stock assessment mistake.
So the 20% cut for this coming season is for the ocean quota.
And we're addressing the bay cap because we're
on the
pretty confident there's
meeting.
Localized depletion. So we're addressing the bay cap at the meeting this week.
Well, very, very, very good. I appreciate it. So anyway, moving, you know, like I was saying earlier, came in, did a 1 mile buffer as a proxy, water depth, you know, was told the only way you're going to get anything through is compromise. You need to compromise the 1/2 mile. First bills didn't get passed, even though I compromised, they didn't get passed anyway. Just looking at that proxy, knowing that, you know, you got these nets that have these, I'm going to say a 15-foot wall. And I was like, well, mathematically, I know that there's other parts of the nets that have larger, deeper areas, but for the most part, saw the MSC website, saw the, you know, purse seines are the proper gear because for open ocean pelagic species, schooling pelagic species, because it never touches the seafloor, allows the predators to get out, blah, blah, blah. And so I did some math and said, well, a 30-foot minimum depth is what it needs to be. If it's a 15-foot wall that they're putting out, then basically that's where that inflection point is at two wall lengths in order to be able to allow the maximum probability of those, as I would imagine MSC would want it to be. But then whenever the bycatch study, the Louisiana $1 million bycatch study came out from LGL, and it had, you know, our most precious species of the red drum, basically with that 22-foot thing, and what's his name, Dr. Rayborn, Scott Rayborn, you know, got up at the meeting that I think Ty and I, and maybe Bailey was there, and he's, you know, if, first of all, he said one thing that I really appreciated, which is, you know, I'm the chief scientist or data analyst on this, and I'm the one who knows the most about it. And then he goes on starting to talk about the 22-foot, you know, curve. I was like, well, I'm gonna probably abandon my 30-foot fight, which is probably harder, and I'm gonna give them the, I'm gonna reduce, or whatever you want to call it, down to 22 feet, and just basically use that size. So Ty, that's how it got there. It was always driven from proper gear type measurement and stuff like that.
No, and I know, like, just reading that right away, I mean, before that even that meeting came about, that was kind of my testimony was, okay, this bill is about the gear. We're not talking what this bill could do if enacted is effectively reduce the bycatch of bull reds. So right. My thing was the testimony should be about the gear, and then
All reds, not just bull reds.
For sure.
They were catching little reds that get ground up as well.
That was my thing. This is not a what they're catching it. This was about the gear type. So I just was like, I wanted to see more testimony derived strictly about this bill, and maybe that's something on organizations and other people that need to educate the legislators that don't know about it. Because even some of the questions they would ask, they would always come back to this whole, they're killing so many bull reds. And then if they're for the industry, the argument was, no, they're not killing as many bull reds. And I just hate that that's what it came to. I think it could have gone a different route if either the testimony or the, you know, education on the subject was a little further, because it wasn't that far off of going through. And that's one of the bills out of all this whole group that could have had some type of meaningful change.
Yeah, just to, you know, from my perspective too, and I think the public's perspective on this, you know, obviously, Representative Orgeron, you don't have control over everybody that gets up there and gives testimony in favor of a bill or opposed. But you've seen, I'm sure, and would agree that there's been a lot of the bycatch issue has been used as definitely one of the more forefront arguments as far as anything that gets into the conversation with this Menhaden stuff. I mean, I think it's even cited in some of the bills that have been in the House, you know, that you've been involved with in earlier years. You know, the redfish stuff is, the verbiage is in the bills. While it's not maybe in that one, or Menhaden's not in that one, the argument from the public's perspective has really taken on this, you know, redfish bycatch versus Menhaden situation today.
I think Todd was there for my testimony. He heard me probably talk about tarpon and maybe kingfish as well, which I got a note in episode 201, Ty, you talked about, why is this guy even saying this? This is like totally not in the right realm. Was me talking about kingfish what you were referring to?
Or the kingfish and the tarpon thing is, you know, that's just another faucet to it. I think somebody mentioned something about marlin. And at that point, I bring it back to the same thing I tell people with red snapper. So when we look at the recreational data from LaCreel and our target species, red snapper is like 2%. So I look at it as, if we're talking about we're again talking about the bycatch thing, which I don't really like that much, because it's a tough argument to win with science-backed data against the Menhaden fleet. And then, you know, if we're throwing things about marlin in there to an already group that they may or may not know what this bill is actually about, what it could potentially help, and just what it's doing in our fishery, I just look at it like, redfish and speckled trout make up the majority percentage of our angler's target out there. And if we want to throw something, you know, a curveball out of the blue, when you look at it from 1,000 feet, it just is so many different things thrown together. And I think, I don't know a lot of these legislators like you do, but at least my understanding of being there and being a lot of these meetings over the years, and it's, I hate to say it, but my understanding of a lot of it, and I know there's a lot of stuff y'all go over, is some of the stuff that is talked about, some of the people don't have a clue. And I don't, I'm not saying that there should be, you know, everybody should be able to pass a test on this, but when there's good public testimony, especially at meetings that we've had over, you know, 100 people at public testimony and stuff like that, I just would like to see it more so, you know, the legislators and whoever's talking be talking directly about the bill and not get sidetracked through different things. I just feel like it leads us down a path. And, you know, when only a couple votes matter, I think in instances like that, it really just helps to keep everybody on topic and constantly pound what this is actually about in there.
When it feels like just a couple of votes, it's people like y'all who get maximally frustrated at it. As I heard in the episode 201, which was, by the way, I know Bailey, this is where I'm going to jump on you a little bit, but the statements you made about, you know, if you're not gonna go up there and get a win, I'm paraphrasing, then you might as well just not do anything at all. You're burning, I think Tony, burning political capital, valuable capital, by not making a win out of this and doing these other things. And I know y'all were talking about the other three do nothing bills, which I'm gonna take issue with. They do something, and oh yeah, the men in the industry are just like, we don't care about those. No. They care about it. They just cared about fishing in 22 feet and deeper only, so much more that that would affect their business. That would do the trick of taking them from insanely profitable down to just extremely profitable. And that's what they were fighting tooth and nail. And I think they made a conscientious effort to say, we could live with these other three. We're just not going to live with that one. And that's why they went hard. And I mean, you know, now's the time that y'all can, you know, put your cookies out for Santa Claus. And I'm going to tell y'all that as far as the level of education of legislators on this particular topic, like we would all, like all four of us here would love to get them to. It's very difficult, or if not, just not going to happen because,
Joe, I believe
there's just
you.
So many other players. I think,
Joe, you don't have to say anything else. I've seen it. I believe you about the education with the other legislators. So Bailey, you field you. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say in regards to, you know, the, and obviously you're paraphrasing, to not getting a win or not go at all. What I was really speaking to was, you know, in the time I've been doing this, I haven't been doing this as long as Ty, but I have been pretty active in state policy around fisheries for the last 4 or 5 years now. Right before we really got into that redfish stuff, I was there for all that. I think I met you back then, Representative Orgeron, and we spoke a little bit. Obviously, there was like a million people at these things. But, you know, for me, it's frustrating to see a couple things. And really what I was speaking to there was one, I do wish we could organize a lot better on some of these more impactful bills, these more impactful legislation than some of what's getting through. And I mean, you tell me, because I've been doing obviously a lot of research, and I'm having a hard time finding things that Menhaden has like come out with a pretty open opposition to, and testified against, that we've managed to pass on them. It seems like whenever they go up to bat, they usually are successful, even with repealing and amending this buffer zone just recently. And I think as just a Louisiana resident, it's super frustrating to see. I mean, they're almost undefeated when it comes to stuff like that. I mean, when I say they don't care, it just feels like it, because I didn't see Francois get up there. I'm out of state right now, but I watched every single testimony live at the Capitol. He didn't get up and really speak out against, you know, those three bills that are currently still making it through and on the Senate floor. But obviously there was like an hour and a half long discussion about your depth regulation.
Put all the eggs in that basket, Bailey. That's what it was. That was the one that would have hurt them. The penalties, I wish I would have been in the room whenever the amendments came out. I mean, I think they modified, Ty, you might have been in the room. They modified the amendments down like ridiculously low.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, I look at it and I wanted more clarity to it. Maybe this is something you could provide or question, you know, the legislator or whoever worked on some of that. That came about from looking at 1,000 feet. And I think they looked at it as like, if I personally, you know, the regular recreational angler were to get a fine, what's the percentage, increase on it? When I would like some clarity on, is the one person that's the captain of that boat getting a fine, or is the company itself getting a fine on it? And then when you look at it like that, well, if you look at, I don't know what it was originally, but, you know, it was far higher than $5,000. Well, what's that? You know, they donated 20 grand when they violated the buffer zone 2 years ago. So I looked at that as like, okay, I think this, at least these people that are trying to amend this, they don't understand what this is actually about or really understand this fishery. Cause they were like, what's the previous fine? It was like $250. And they were like, well, why the hell are we going to 10 grand? And in reality, when you look at it, well, what's $250 for them? They might as well just sign that up on recurring auto pay.
Whatever this bill was whenever the full package of four, people were asking me about Representative Cox's bill. And I was like, the penalty's so low that, trust me, if my 22-foot bill passes and magically gets signed by the governor and all of that, they'll just get you inside of it and just shell out the money, you know. So that's why we had to do that one had to be part of it. And then, of course, in the last few years, there's been so much talk about them being wherever the buffer had one, the steamer vessel would be right outside that, and the net boats were going in. Even though Francois in North Bend says that they put GPSs on every boat so that they know not to go in. I mean, you could believe them. I know that Wildlife and Fisheries put out a notice earlier or at the end of last session saying that they were called out somewhere in Terrebonne Parish where they were fishing. They went out there and they saw no violations. They were, even the net boats were staying behind a lot of them. So who knows? But now, you know, if you got AIS, anybody can monitor. For a while, they were pushing for some VMS, like a vessel monitoring system, something that the live shrimp guys that y'all know probably all knew somebody y'all get live bait from. Those guys that go at night have a special pay for subscription with Wildlife and Fisheries for system. And I don't know if the menhaden industry was looking like, could we get that instead? And I'm like, why would they want to do that? That's more expensive than just buying an EIS. But the problem with EIS is any of us could be monitoring that. The guys on the fishing by the rocks could monitor the net boats, you know? So anyway, I think it were all parts of the package needed to be done. The one that I still have that's going forward, that's probably the most ridiculous one, the data confidentiality, you know? Just because an industry devolves down to two players, there's some magic cloak of secrecy that we can't give out the data. That was, trust me, they would have been stupid to oppose that one just flat out. And Wildlife and Fisheries was like, look, it's just a gap in the process. Happy to help you. So actually even heads of Wildlife and Fisheries helped draft that the exact text to make sure that we didn't mess up any Magnuson, what is it, Stephen Magnuson? They want to make sure that the data, the statewide aggregated data could get out and not mess anything up. So anyway,
yeah, 22 I mean, foot,
still there, man, still got to get something like that across.
That's, and I'm perfectly, you know, I've testified in favor of that and in favor of many other things against the Menhaden groups over the years. And You know, I just look at it for me as a recreational angler, and then me of going up there and watching not just the Menhaden stuff. We've watched the legislature, you know, completely ignore public comment over redfish issues. We watched the commission do it over Menhaden. You've been a part of some of that too, and some of those meetings. And like, I look at it from a frustrated Louisiana resident, born and raised here, generations here, of like, at what point is it more about the fishery and less about the dollar or less about the look at me? And I look at it and more so, you know, some of these bills, you know, if we could have got the 22-foot depth requirement through, that's actually meaningfully impactful. But then you look at some of this stuff, and then you look at, you know, one of the reasons that we kind of got into you was this HCR5 stuff. We look at some of this stuff about the bycatch thing. That's why I really don't like to see the bycatch stuff brought up, especially when it's being brought back up that recreationally we want to come back around and kill some more bull reds.
We could pivot to HCR5 just a tad bit later. I just got a a big Tonka truck somewhere that I want to hit somebody in the back of the head with and tell somebody, put away your cookies and milk, because I'm about to tell you that Santa Claus ain't real. So, you know what I'm talking about. But the politics of it is there's a lot of money that was spent. There's a lot of lobbyists that were working the floor prior to my 22-foot bill going up. So there was an unexpected crazy amount of lobbying that was going on to be able to make sure that I lost by a few votes. And hopefully next year we could get, like I said, every mule that wants to pull in the same direction will all be pulling in the same direction, and we could work in a more concerted effort to get this done. You know, we talked about the Marine Sustainability Council, Stewardship Council, and, you know, I tried to get... you might know him, Mr. Campo, that in Shell Beach. He told me a fantastic story about, you know, pukiang and catching shrimp and getting a frame stuck in where a pogey boat had kind of like parked and ran up. And in conversations that I had with MSC fisheries managers talking about the water depth and the weights hitting the bottom, Tony, they were like, yeah, you know, weights on trawls and other sustainable gear, it is. I said, well, what about a larger than normal vessel plowing in the mud and disrupting a shrimper from doing it? He was like, whoa, that, now you got something. Now you got an action that we might be able to do something about, you know. So trying to get some of that to come into the Capitol and bring it, but without the person to come in person and testify, the person that did it and experienced it, I don't think it happened the way that I wanted it to. But anyway, there's other things that we could work on.
You had somebody when you proposed HB 1033 back in 2022. You had somebody come on and talk about that.
Yeah,
about the start and the bottom, and that was a pretty. I thought that was a pretty meaningful testimony. And that's another thing where I look at it from a recreational angler at the time, and I'm like, this just completely got ignored by the whole panel. And I hate seeing stuff like that.
That former testimony took a new spot in my calculus there whenever the MSC guy was like, you know, I'm going to say poo-pooing the weights touching the bottom, or a complete indiscriminate tape fishing in with that gear type in shallow water. And he just really focused on, oh, that's a no-no, you know, that scarring the bottom, you know, to the detriment of another commercial fisherman, not going to happen on our clock. You know? So anyway,
super quick before we just hop off of, the continuing resolution for the redfish rodeos. Now, I don't know every redfish rodeo in the state. There's a couple of stipulations, right? It has to be open. You know, it had to exist for 5 years, a couple other stipulations. And let's say there's give or take maybe five rodeos that would fall under this continuing resolution. And Representative Orgeron, you can correct me if I'm wrong on any of that. I'm trying to be as accurate as possible.
No. That's kind of how they that's how it was written.
Yeah.
Not me rocking it. So go ahead.
Okay. So you know, there's been the reason why I got so wound up. So I'm just kind of, I wouldn't say this is a rebuttal. This is just a discussion. The reason why I'm so wound up about this continuing resolution, and it's a couple of things in a couple of different layers. And I will give you all the time in the world to, you know, in anything that I say is open for discussion. You're the guest, but I don't want to let this go without any more comments, because I think it hinges on the frustration that you heard in the blog and on the podcast. So I think it was HB 1033. Menhaden, the Menhaden fishery was used, kind of recreational harvest.
Used Bull Red harvest.
Of Bull Red as a defense against regulation in the Senate Natural Resources Committee. And then that was in 2022. And I, unfortunately for y'all, I wasn't in Louisiana then, or maybe I was, I'm not sure. I was probably showed up in 2023, for HB 576. And we were kind of going through some of the bill language for HB 576. And it was about the spawning stock for redfish decreased to a point where it needs extra protection. And this bill was also for those Menhaden coastal exclusion zones to protect spawning bull reds. So this is where it gets interesting. If you fast forward to like July 2023, we were at the commission in full force, got them to approve a redfish reduction to 3 fish. And then the joint oversight hearing, that got shot down in favor of 4 fish. That was you. And unfortunately, according to LDWF's numbers, that increased the recovery timeline by 16 years. So, so then fast forward, you know, the 4 fish thing went through. Y'all had a devastating cold stun that they were supposed to be done assessing like in the fall, but I still didn't hear anything. And then the kind of the gravy on the taters was when you put out a redfish tag for $25 to let people kill bull reds again. So I'm just from a real high level in 2022, you used harvestable redfish and the Menhaden fishery with HB 1033. In 2023, you stated that the spawning stock for redfish decreased to a point needs extra protection. And that
also
was for,
sponsored that, SCR 46 from Center Island.
Right, that one
urging,
too.
Urging a request in the commission to not kill any bull reds, anybody.
So, and then the tag thing, yikes. And then HCR5 allowing the rodeos to resume harvest of bull reds. So there's 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and tie 6 with the Senate thing, where it's kind of a little bit of a mixed message here, because y'all are at a 30-year low for adult redfish populations. There is a spawn-recruit relationship. You've lost 1 million acres of land in the last 100 years. If you allow a couple of rodeos to do it, a couple of things are going to happen. It's going to open up Pandora's box. And once you open up Pandora's box, you never know what's going to come out. And there's mixed signals with the policy. You know, what Ty was saying about you know, about the bycatch, big reds, little reds, tarpon, kingfish, catfish, you know, whatever you want to say. But then to turn around and have the recreational anglers harvesting big redfish again, and it seems like a pattern of behavior, because you have the tags, you have the rodeos, and then the year before you had the tags, and then the year before you kicked us in the hoo-has with the three fish versus the four fish, and in between the tags and the three fish versus the four fish, we had a devastating cold stun. And I'll tell you what, you'd be a lot happier right now if you were back to, if you had just kind of let the three fish go. And then on top of all that, with like the tangled web, somewhere in between you advocating for the three fish back to four fish, that's when this buffer zone stuff came up. And then we're going to get
NOI NOI while we were doing
and
that.
Like, I can tell you, with the four people on this podcast, there's no one that can touch the experience that I have in fisheries policy, and none of this stuff should ever be a deal that's made in a back room. And I think it came around and bit everyone right where we got kicked for the three fish versus four fish, because now you see what happens when there's a deal. And all of this comes down to the amount of money flowing out of the reduction fishery to outsize their influence in the Louisiana legislature and amongst other decision makers. So I know that was a lot, but I saw you writing down, because I can't let HCR 5 get past that easy. I'm going to shut up. I'll give you time to talk. But after you say, you know, your thoughts, which I respect, I'm going to go to why all of this is connected to the Menhaden bills and why it's so infuriating for us. So I'm putting myself on mute so you can't hear my dogs barking, and you're up, Representative Bourgeron.
Thank you. Well, first of all, y'all did a very good job on the previous episode, basically highlighting that whole timeline. And that's whenever I said, y'all really didn't get it wrong. Y'all were pretty much, you laid it out. I'm not going to deny any of everything, all you said. And y'all did a pretty good job of painting me as a turd. I understand how it looks, but you need to understand the septic tank of Louisiana politics, and whether you want to dress up as a turd to get in and mix in, or whether or not you go in clean and you come out looking like a turd. That's perception for y'all to figure out there. All right. I've always had genuine interest in doing what's right for the fishery, so I'm just going to lay that down. A couple of corrections on what I wrote down. You called it a continuing resolution. Let's get the terminology right. It's a House concurrent resolution. And it's not a law. It's not me saying I got something new, a new idea. As Ty heard earlier at the Finfish Task Force, this is an authority that the Secretary of Wildlife and Fisheries already has. He already has the ability to provide a permit for a rodeo, any rodeo, Toadies tomorrow made rodeo, to be able to come in and start killing redfish. Do it. So no guardrails whatsoever, only at the discretion of the Secretary of Wildlife and Fisheries to be able to do it. I am also a representative that represents down in Grand Isle. And there is a rodeo down there that has been in existence, surprisingly to me, not until I actually had to go and present HCR 5 that I find out that rodeo has been in existence since 1964 or something like that. It's like a couple of years, predates my 60-year-old butt by a couple of years. So it's been there regularly running every year, with a bull red category that for the last 4 years or 3 years, they've been putting a white piece of paper over the word bull. And they occasionally take a picture and send it to me asking for help. They know that I got that the secretary has that authority. I had been asked. And Ty heard me say today that, you know, we discussed it. And I basically told him, I said, look, I've tried everything I can to convince him about Bubba's smart scales that have Bluetooth enabled photo, tried everything I could to get them to let the killing of the bullhead go to no avail. Told them, I said, all right, you're making me play the genie here. You know the infamous proverbial rub the genie's lamp, make a wish, and whether or not what you end up with is what you wished for. I'm gonna help you out because I've just now learned that wildlife and fisheries was told that they needed to make this move forward, that this was something that they were going to move forward. And my name was brought up as, well, there is one representative who has been asking about this. And that's how the merger got put together. And I figured, hey, at least if there's going to be some guardrails put on, I'm going to jump in and try to put the guardrails on. The 5 years should have been 50 years. I should have bitched that it should have been 50 years, because then it would probably only be one rodeo that would be able to do it. But anyway, I didn't know where the other nexus or the other drive to have this pass through was coming from. So anyway, here we are. HCR5 is a House concurrent resolution, which, like I said, has has the force of law without being a law, just changes a pre-existing rule set, and does not, here's another thing, is it does not have to be signed by the governor. It only has to go through the House Natural Resource, in my case, this particular case, House Natural Resources, House Floor, Senate Natural Resources, and Senate Floor, and then it's done. So that's how HCR5 came about, and I am on the record saying that for the organizers who want to have this rodeo, I've told them to their face, I don't mind this podcast being the second place that I say it, but I ain't going to throw y'all no shade. Whenever y'all start doing this and y'all put out y'all pictures, I ain't going to be there to defend in any way, shape, or form. So,
yeah, Francois is saving all those for the next time he's got to go to trial on Midnight and stuff.
Gotcha. Well, anyway, there's you go. That's where we at. Did my best to convince them, couldn't convince them otherwise, figured steer into the skid, help devise the guardrails, make it as small of a hit as possible. I think this will, I'm going to say blow up in their face, but it'll happen, and then I think it will drop off. You're saying Pandora's box. I totally understand the analogy of what that means. I don't know. I don't see it going that way.
I'd like a quick question about the HCR5, because I was reading it a little bit today before we got on here. I think you've mentioned this, and I think Ty mentioned it today at the task force thing, and I'm pretty sure I remember you mentioning it on the House floor or at the committee. Is there an intention to have like LDWF officials at these tournaments that qualify? Well, I was just going to say, I didn't see anything about that in the actual resolution.
It's written as its intention, but it's not required.
Correct. And I was told as I was handed the draft of HCR5, relinquish all of the captured fish. And I told the organizer that, who at one point in time was telling me about the redfish coupe bouillon that they make with these big fish and how expertly they take out the bloodline and they're able to do stuff with it and all of that. And I told him, said, hey, I'm just letting you know that I just got my first look at what they're saying. It's restrictive. Y'all fit into that. But it looks like y'all won't be able to keep the fish. But anyway, Daly, that answers your question.
I was trying to get to was like the use of these fish for data purposes and data collection.
You sold to me.
And I guess I just, you know, when you don't see anything about that specifically in the resolution, I'm a little bit hesitant to believe at this point that like we're, and not necessarily believe you or not, I'm not saying that, but you understand that they ultimately end up contributing to some kind of data within LDWF or supplementing a stock assessment or something like that? Are we sure that that's actually how they're going to be used, or are they going to wind up in a dumpster, or like, you know, that kind of thing?
I was told otolith collection, gonads, stomach contents, weight and girth data from a predictable single weekend where geographically people from freshwater, you know, freshwater city all the way to the mouth of the river, that they'll get a geographical swath to be able to get it. Equally surprised not to see anything in the HCR mandating that. Then just assume they know when the rodeo is going to be. It's going to be on the application for the permit. They're going to send the biologists. I've already told the organizers it's going to happen. And if, you know, they can, hopefully they can make it and they'll be there and get good data out of that. And if not, I guess they didn't want to box themselves in to make it a mandatory thing. Speculation. Never a single conversation with anybody over there in enforcement or biology about that particular topic.
Okay.
Yeah, I just look at it. I mean, from an optics standpoint, it just looks bad based on how it's written like that. And then like that instance there. So not only are we going to reopen, you know, which I know, like we've all known that the secretary has the authority to do that whenever, but he hasn't yet, you know, in a couple of years. So it's not like nobody's been beating down his door to ask him. I just don't like, it seems like it was kind of it's like an invite to, you know, here we go, let's open it up again. And then from a scientific standpoint, the only reason I could think that they didn't put it in there as a requirement is because it won't amount to anything in the stock assessment. It's going to be such a biased piece of data, you know, it's from one area, small data set, and you know it's tough to throw that at a biologist and say, hey, put this in there, it's 0.02%, but it's more than zero, so let's throw it in there. And maybe that's why they didn't put it in there, but it just scares me when I don't see stuff like that, because the last thing I want to see is, you know, a stock tank full of 50 bull reds dead on the dock like we've seen in years past that's been shared all around the internet, that people like, you know, some of the menhaden groups pull up at different meetings or whatever they spew across the internet. And it's just from an optics standpoint, that's what caught me from 1,000 feet. That was the number one red flag right away is that.
I saw 93 dead ones on the Grand Isle last summer, so at the end of the summer. So I know where they came from.
I'm in Port Salford. If you want to go that route, so like we're talking about the 22-foot data, one of the other things that I fought so hard about it, and I gave testimony for that, and I liked it because you look at where I fish a lot in Port Salford, from Bastion to Bay Long. Nobody really knows anything about that. There's no pretty beach there. It's not Grand Isle. There's not a ton of people there. There's a lot of people that fish there. People from Venice fish there a ton. There's been instances where they run up and wrap the net boats around us and all in years past. And I will say they've been better about it. You know, they've been better about it the years they tried to avoid conflict. I'll give them the credit for that. But at the end of the day, even when it was a half mile buffer, that line was behind the island of Port Sulphur. So it didn't matter. And that's where I'm looking at, like, that's where I get at. And I'm like, I know that we had, like, let's just be 100% clear on this data. Let's hit every data point. And that's where we come to, you know, you in this instance right here. I know Tony's told you. I know I've told you, like, we're here for information, for help. You know, I said this to any legislator and any senator in the state. Like, there's a lot of people, and I'd be willing to help anybody. And if it helps our fishery in any way, I'd be willing to help. And that's one thing where I look at, like, another bad optics point of the HCR5. I look at it. That is no way at all, shape, or form going to increase our spawning stock whatsoever, no matter how small the decrease. So I look at that as saying I'm willing to help anybody and anything as long as we have an increase in our fisheries populations, mostly surrounding redfish and speckled trout, because, you know, that's my business. And I just look at it like I'd do anything for my son to be able to see what I see, you know, 10 years ago, 25 years from now?
Well, let's, okay. That's all well and good. So Representative Orgeron, you know, when I kind of went down that chain of events, did you have any other comments? Because I kind of want to drill in on one thing in particular, but I just want to give you an opportunity, you know, fair opportunity. Is there anything else? Yeah. I heard what you said. I respect what you said. I'm the reluctant gene. I am not here.
Me?
To crucify you, much like you. What I want is open dialogue. We know where everyone's coming from. So, like, these aren't gotcha moments. This is more like, I want you to understand why you heard what you heard. Because because we're really good at what we do. And it wasn't, it was years of frustration. So I want to, here's where, to me, it gets a little dangerous, right? Because there is some thing that is driving people in your area to want to kill big redfish. And I'm not going to get into the fact that, like, would you agree that redfish eat menhaden? Like, big redfish eat adult menhaden. That's a yes. Yes. That's a hard yes, right? Okay. So your adult menhaden aren't safe for human consumption. The Virginia ones, by me, are the ones that go into the pills, the heart pills that don't do anything for you but make your breath stink. And apparently Bailey told me they could make you poop your pants. I didn't know that. But, you know,
just anecdotal personal
sorry about that, Bailey, but I'm sorry that happened to you. Those drives from Arkansas to Louisiana are really long, with few rest stops. But that happens. You know, so these things are eating stuff that's not safe for human consumption, and you know, an adult Louisiana menhaden's maybe 6 years old. Adult redfish over 25 years old, and who the heck knows how old they'll get. So a lot longer in the ecosystem eating things that probably make you not good to eat. But that's not even relevant. The thing that horrified me, because this is something that I deal with a lot with fish in the Atlantic, is the tag issue. And I pray that doesn't come back around. Because, like, for bluefin tuna, the gen cat, you know, you have to report those fish. And we're looking at, depending on who you talk to, 20-25% compliance rate on that. And you're talking about fish that are 5-6 feet long, weigh hundreds of pounds. And, you know, in the Atlantic, if you think about our coastline, we have inlets. You know, it's not like geographically y'all are blessed, because there's just, frankly, there's a million different places where people can just launch a boat and go fishing. For us, you know, you can't do that off our beaches. You'll die. Like, you won't get out of the surf break. And, like, you know, the inlets, you might die there as well. But there are these choke points to check people. And you're talking about a couple hundred pounds, 4, 5, 6 feet long, 7 feet long in some cases, and they're just not reporting them. So there's a bonus tag in stripers for New Jersey. And take heart, Representative Orgeron, New Jersey is far and away the shithole of fisheries. The Louisiana isn't even close, okay? Y'all have an incredible state agency, and you have legislators who care, but probably need to be educated. So there's a bonus tag in New Jersey. And when they stopped the commercial fishery for striped bass, they took that quota, which was only a couple of 100,000 pounds. And they said, well, if you send a letter to the state, we'll send you a bonus tag. And you can kill a small striper from 24 to 27 or whatever, 28 inches, whatever it was. And the entire state of New Jersey, which, by the way, the whole beach is open access. There's you can just park your car, walk right on the beach, fish. There's state parks. There's everything. Stripers crash the beach all the time. 1,000 tags reported in a year. So you have 20% compliance on blue. So what I'm telling you, Representative Orgeron, is that people will get a tag and they'll never use it. And they'll keep killing a big redfish. And when they see old Mr. Green Jeans coming, they'll pull that tag out, slap it in the fish. So what you have is an unaccountable fishery. You have now bad data in, bad data out. You're a scientist. Bad data in, bad data out. Now you don't know how many, you have no idea how many fish are dying. You're at a 30-year low for striped bass. For redfish, for adult redfish populations, you're at a 30-year low. Sorry, I just got out of the striped bass hearing. You're at a 30-year low for redfish. You're not going to have a single clue how many are being killed, and you're selling them to fund a hatchery that is in your state, which has never been successful in the history of redfish and saltwater fisheries management since humans have been on the earth.
I appreciate you clarifying that, because I really thought from our prior conversations you were more locked on the unsuccess, that the undeniable never can be, ever be successful hatchery concept, than you were on the mechanics of the tag and you know, just pulling it out for convenience at the right time type of thing. So
no, but it's, I'd say 50-50.
Okay, well, there
I
you
don't,
go.
I don't think the hatchery, like, it's snowball in hell, pigs flying, Jesus on my keyboard.
I use the analogy recently of, you know, Apollo 1 burned up on the launch pad. We didn't give up. So, you know, is a hatchery, you know, you're never going to get to the moon. Or is it something that, if we have enough failures, we can learn from them and eventually be able to do something like that?
Well, for what it's worth on that, I'd like to just jump in on that. Texas and South Carolina run hatchery programs. They're both looking at reducing the creel size of, I mean, Texas has steadily reduced their creel limit on redfish, and South Carolina, I believe, is doing that right now. I mean, I just sat and watched a hearing about that with their wildlife commission. And
I have a whole team of people like Bailey and Ty.
No.
Heading from the coast to Columbia, South Carolina tomorrow to testify. And listen to this. This is your nightmare, Representative Orgeron. One redfish or a 2 redfish boat limit. So if you're a charter guy, you got 6 guys in the boat, you can only keep 2 redfish a day. And they have stocked somewhere north of 30 million fingerlings, not fry. And it's Bears Bluff, which is a federally funded hatchery that is massive. It is like a campus. It looks like a college campus when you drive in. So my question would be, I have never been to the, I think it's RFRI hatchery in Mississippi. I've never been there. I can't imagine if you're trying to sell $25 tags to kill big redfish, that is it as expansive as a federal hatchery, Bears Bluff, or Texas A&M, which grows all the redfish.
With 20 years of data showing that it's like a 2% survival rate on those stocked fish.
And that's not a survival rate, by the way, that to spawning stock. That's survival rate to the lower creel limit in Texas.
Gotcha. Well, look, y'all don't need to convince me anymore. I'm on Team Tony now a little bit more.
Okay, we're recording this, Representative Orgeron.
I got you, because in researching HDR5 and the use of otoliths, I came across this obscure research paper that talked about red drum grown in hatcheries that they grew to full maturity, and they looked at the unnormal, unnatural shape of the otoliths and stuff. Like, in addition to just being an age thing, it also does like a data logger, and they were not properly formed otoliths.
No, in we call hatcheries. Them tank scrubbers. Like, that's it. It's like, you know, I Representative Orgeron, I know I'm a bitter pill to swallow. I only have to ask my wife, or my friends, or my mom when she was alive, and they could have given you a chronological or alphabetical list of all the things that I need to change or improve upon. But I agree with most of it. So you're on Team Tony with the hatchery stuff. So I guess my question is this. This is kind of a statement and a question. Because of the way the Menhaden stuff played out,
right?
We saw this coming from 100 miles away, and I'm just going to lay it out on the floor. It's not really you that we're torqued over, okay? I know. Look, this may come as a surprise to you, but if you want to talk about a corrupt state, I think New York and Rhode Island have y'all beat. Like, you said the septic system of Louisiana, or, you know, you had said that. I'm just saying, I deal with stuff that's like, it's mind-boggling, okay? So I think a big part of the problem is that you're listening to your constituents, which is fine. You represent these people. You are elected by them. And if they, even if it's batshit crazy, they're voting for you. They're supporting you. And frankly, we need more people in Congress on the state level, on the federal level, that have the intestinal fortitude to stand up and be like, hey, look, this is what they wanted. They elected me. What do you want me to do? Kudos to you, man. Okay. Now, where I think you took a left turn and instead of going to Albuquerque is you're listening to the wrong people who really know about fisheries. I can give you that mulligan. I'm not going to beat you up over that. Your constituents want it. Let's face off in the state legislature and let's see who wins. I don't want to be on the podcast on 3 years from now and being like, dude, I told you every rodeo, every fishing tournament and every rodeo, and it opened up Pandora's box and we're in Schittsville, USA. I hope you're right. I pray you're right. But I'll tell you who isn't right is the fisheries advocates that you're listening to. And this is what upset us. We knew that those two bills, because of Louisiana politics, Senator Fessy's bill that would have put a tack of 300 million pounds in change, which is significant. I mean, that's over a 50% reduction in harvest. We know that was probably never going to see the light of day. And when I looked at your bills and I saw the 22 foot, I said, there ain't a snowball's chance in hell that Governor Landry's going to sign that bad boy. No way. So what does that leave us with? Three bills that do not do a heck of a lot. But they do something. They give these groups an opportunity to lie to advocates and fundraise in the name of those bills. And that's disingenuous on a cosmic scale. Because you know what's going to happen is I'll be talking to advocates 2 years from now and I'll be like, you know what? That Representative Orgeron, I knew he was a good guy. It took me 5 years, but I worked with him on this legislation, and this is the thing that can help Louisiana make the Menhaden harvest sustainable, limit user conflicts, and not, you know, really limit bycatch. This is it. This is the silver bullet we've been waiting for. And they're going to look at me and go, nah, I tried that a couple of years ago and nothing happened. It sucks. Everything's crooked. It doesn't work. So that really sucks. And then the other thing is that's one part of burning up political capital. And then the other part of burning up political capital was in the Senate hearing when Senator Alain, you know, said, hey, man, we're here every year. We're here every year. And you just got this job as CCA executive director because the previous executive director is now the executive director for the Louisiana Petroleum and Petrochemical Association or whatever it's called. I may have missed that by a hair, but yeah, that's a natural progression, right? To go from being a executive director of a conservation association to a petrochemical association, right? I mean, next thing I guess is just DDT. I'm the executive director of the DDT Foundation. So, if y'all representative, I made a Representative Orgeron laugh. You can't see the video, but he just chuckled a little bit. When Senator Elaine says, You're king of the world for a day. What are you going to do? And I'm looking at Mo, Larry, and Curly on the panel and looks him dead in the eye and says, I just got this job last summer. I don't want to even be here. This is the last thing I want to be dealing with. I think that was the exact quote. This is the last thing I want to be dealing with. What? Protecting your resources for the people that you're supposed to represent, for the kids that want to experience the greatness of, in my opinion, the only destination fishery besides the Florida Keys in the entire country outside of Alaska. You have Alaska, the Florida Keys, and you have Louisiana, and there's a damn good reason they call it the Sportsman's Paradise. And I just wanted to, you were honest with me. I accepted your honesty. You want to know where our aggravation was coming from? You got Mo, Larry, and Curly fundraising on this crap, telling their advocates that this stuff is going to make a difference, burning advocates out. And then I had a crybaby call, texting me, telling Bailey, you know, that Bailey called him a buffoon when he didn't call him a buffoon. That I thought the mighty men of Louisiana had a thicker skin. But in any event, I just wanted to lay it out on the table. I think what you said in the beginning of the podcast, that, you know, as a whole, the state legislature, like, I'm going to put it to you like this. If you grow up out west and you have these 14,000 foot peaks and you have 10 feet of snow and you learn how to ski out there, it's like skiing on a down pillow. And if you go out east and you go to these hellscape mountains that is solid 4 foot of ice with jagged cliffs, it's not as easy. And I think that y'all have had a real easy time with your fisheries because you are the Colorado Rockies for skiing, for fish. You got everything. You got everything. And it's all been blessed to you. And I think it's really easy and they don't have to know this stuff because y'all have it so good. And what I'm telling you is they better start learning, because when the wheels come off, they come off fast. And there's a lot of coastal communities. There's a lot of mom and pop sandwich shops, little hotels here and there, tiny little towns that depend on your natural resources in a good way. Not extracting, you know, whatever, but like a family going out and fishing and passionately falling in love and wanting to protect Louisiana. Everything I think you believe in, Representative Orgeron. So I just want to be clear that when push comes to shove, with all the state legislators I know from Maine all the way to Texas, I kind of like you. I kind of took a shine to you because at least you have a genuine nature about you and you appreciate honesty. And I wanted to give you mine in return. You're listening to the wrong people who are fundraising on the tragedy of the commons that's occurring in your marsh. And all that I can say is after this podcast, I don't even think I have to say it, but I think you know I know more than them. And I would have the best interest of the people of Louisiana at heart and your best interest as a congressman. And what I'm saying is, you know, I hope moving forward that we can work together and make a positive difference in your state because the people of Louisiana deserve it.
Boom. I appreciate it. I'll swing by the drive-through of the ASGA Policy Emporium next year around February, and I'll roll down the window and say, give me the bills. Give me the – does that have magic bullet certification on it? Please just pass them to me. I'll run them as is, and there you go. He's, for those of you who can't see it, Tony spat himself on the chest. He's going to have all the policies for me in 2027 to be able to run to finally put science-based common sense regulations on the Louisiana industrial menhaden reduction fishery. But Tony, I think the more honest point I want to make is I'm not leaving anybody by the wayside. I understand what you're saying. I might be listening to the wrong people, but in this particular job, you know, you got to listen to everybody and you have to, it's always a synthesis. So I'm going to, like I said, I'm going to continue listening. I'm going to continue fighting. Already got people who voted no on that close vote on the 22-foot bill, Ty, that have come and said, are you going to run it next year? To which I said yes. And they said, I want to be a co-author on it. So,
and that's one of those things,
whether or not it'll end up being the same exact thing or with Senator Allen and some other things happening, that's not for, you know, for... That's part of the clogging, the unclogging of the toilets that go into the septic system. As we continue the analogy here, there's a lot of ugly stuff that y'all don't want to see. So I'll be handling that. But I do appreciate all the input. And like I said, you know, despite the last episode being a bash-a-thon, I figured I'd come on and let you know where you were right and where I think we needed to tweak, and all for the benefit of the fishery. That's the main goal. So well, that's why I'm here.
I would like to just speak on the bash-a-thon, just to touch on something that I think sitting down, doing a lot of the reading and the history of this thing, I'm finding myself really feeling like we missed an opportunity with the redfish regulation thing, where it's obvious this Menhaden issue and regulating the Menhaden fleet in any way is such an uphill fight. I mean, it is and I'm sure you can attest more than anyone, it is an absolute battle fighting these guys in legislation. It's hard to get anything done with them. And when we had such an excellent opportunity to do a really impactful thing for the fishery, I know there were a lot of, that was a very contested issue. There were a lot of people on both sides. I think that's when, you know, we have to step in as stewards of this place. And I look at you as a steward of this place as well, Orgeron, in the position you're in, and help educate these people. Look, because here's the way I'm looking at it now. It's going to take years to get anything done with these Menhaden guys. We're hoping for maybe reintroducing a bill similar to that 22-foot thing next year, as to what you just said. And hopefully that might get through the committee and then through the floor and then through the Senate and then through the governor. Whereas when we have opportunities like that the redfish regulation, I think we have to take those chances as a state and do something about the state of the fishery, because all the while we've watched the fishery continue to struggle. The Menhaden thing hasn't been addressed, and we're still kind of in the same position while shooting down legislation like that.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, and you see it too. I know, you know, you do a lot with your nonprofit and all, Representative Orgeron, and, you know, retreat or restore, you know, you see it with, you know, I kind of equivalate it to, you know, our coastal restoration stuff. I look at it as, we have so many things and we're sitting here bickering for 10 years on what we should do. And I look at it as like, let's do everything we can. You do it with your own nonprofit. Y'all do, you know, I've heard you say it as like the icing and the cherry on top of a cake. Let's go plant mangroves. Let's go do this. Let's go do that. Let's go do real meaningful things in the meantime that really amount to it. And that's kind of the thing is, you know, let's if we're going to be dealing with this, let's turn the knob we can turn. And that's the whole thing we backed the redfish regulation so hard with, especially the three fish, was like, here's the number one knob we can turn right now that's going to absolutely indefinitely help this fishery in the biggest, largest way possible right this second. And then it only strengthens our argument against the Menhaden groups. Because we say, look, we didn't just do the bare minimum that was proposed by the department. We reached and did even more, even took a more proactive management. And now you need to come to the table and take a proactive management in what y'all are doing. And I feel like we kind of missed the ball on that. And that's what I just, you know, I hate seeing things like that. And then when you get things brought up about, you know, killing bull reds and all again, I think it kind of knocks our testimony a little bit against them. And that's part of the frustration I've had, you know, the past 5 or so years and most of the Menhaden stuff.
It ain't easy being in this state either and trying to fight the Menhaden industry and then running that ECO. So.
No, but I mean, I appreciate the honesty on it. You know, I was kind of curious of like, where is this coming from? What's the sentiment
on it? As far as the fight for four rather than three, saw the science, totally agree the shorter path to recovery is better. Just was hearing from a lot of guides, professional Louisiana guides, saying that that was too big of a change for them. Now, were they lying, Tony? Do they just like killing redfish? Do they like ending the villagers who want to take a knife to the goose that's laying the golden egg, you know, or were they legitimate in that reduction would have just hurt their business, a little too much?
Well, so
opposition to change more than anything.
Yeah. What's that?
If you just take it from a standpoint of testimony and, you know, people chiming in on what they thought, it was definitely more so, people were more so in favor of the more conservative three fish thing statewide. I mean, even the guys by me, I mean, there were tons of spin fishermen by me that sent in emails agreeing with it as well. I mean, me myself, I let people kill some fish every now and then. And I was like, you know, what's better for the fish? What's better for my son in 25 years is what the way I looked at it. So, and then we go to that Joint Natural Resource Committee meeting, and the testimony in favor of the three fish was overwhelming. It was far, there was only six that spoke, in opposed to that change, to going against the three fish. One of them was a conservation association here, and they spoke against changing it to three fish. And that's one thing that really hurt me, because that's the freaking people I looked up to sitting in the back of these rooms 15 years ago and 10 years ago saying, this guy's got it figured out. They're looking at the best interests of the fishery. And that was another moment that I was like, no, we are led wrong, you know, and here we are giving testimony. Here we are, you know, the thousands of emails, and it gets, you know, taken from us because six people oppose it.
Let's look at the rhetoric used by CCA, and that is who testified against that three fish down to four thing. The rhetoric has been for a long time that the menhaden bycatch is the thing to blame for the impact on the fishery. And that's the forefront thing they talk about as far as just public facing. And I think that's where you do have a lot of these guides coming to you. Because I talk to them too after these meetings, Representative Orgeron. I usually stick around and they come up and talk to me about it. And they're like, well, you know, we got to deal with the menhaden. And I remember when you called that Joint Oversight Committee, you asked about how the NOI for the buffer zone might affect the stock assessment numbers and the percentage reductions. You were asking Jason Andriens that question. And to me, it's like, a lot of people think that if we can get over this hump with menhaden, we may not have to take such a dramatic reduction in our redfish limits. And I know that's what I got told by a lot of those people that were probably talking to you about amending that NOI. And I think that's where we're falling short in the state. We're not educating people and informing people properly. I think you would agree it's way more impactful to change the redfish regulations than anything we can do to the menhaden. They don't kill nearly as many fish as we do. That's just a fact. And, you know, I think that the public doesn't understand that. And so that's what's frustrating for me is seeing when you come up there and say, I was told by X amount of people that I needed to repeal this thing and I'm listening to them. Well, they're being led by an association that's really touting the menhaden bycatch. And that's the big reason as to why the fishery is the way it is. And they're not talking about the effects we have as recreational anglers on the stock.
So, I hear you.
Well, what can we expect for the rest of the session, Representative Orgeron? What are you thinking?
Get the three remaining menhaden bills through. You did see, if you watched the Senate, you saw that Chairman Hinchins wants to be the one who runs them on the floor himself. He wants to be in control of that. So, little, I guess you call it suspicious, but it's the only way those bills would move any further.
So you think suspicious? Do you think there's amendments coming up since he's going to run the bill?
The agreement is that if there are amendments, that they would be communicated and agreed to by the various three authors. And yeah, so we'll see.
Well,
the only amendment I discussed was removing from the data confidentiality one has in his original reporting bill that they sample fork lengths with each set that they bait, which is a pain in the butt for the fishermen on the boat because they do sample the fork lengths whenever they pump them out at the dock, and they do scale samples for aging, and they do more rigorous collection of information at the pump out back at the dock. And I've asked the biologist at Wildlife and Fisheries, and he concurred that he's like, I don't even know where that got added into the original reporting bill, but it would be perfectly fine for them to not have to do that on a per set basis. So that is the only amendment that the senator and I spoke about.
Is there any word on SB 186 from Fezzi?
Good question. Doubt it. I mean, the problem now is with, you know, being 12, whatever, of the 13-week session being in week 8 or 9, it's starting to get time-wise, you know, highly improbable that any bill that gets its first committee meeting now has a chance of without suspension of rules and 2/3 votes or things like that, hardly no chance of it making it through the process.
Are there any things on the horizon? Like, did you learn anything through this process? And anything that you're thinking about in the future?
Ty, today we were at the Finfish Task Force, and you heard me talk about how, well, there was something on their topic, on their agenda about, like, how to make themselves more effective. Is that what that
yeah,
topic
that was? I think that was from David Alfonso, but...
Yes. So I got up at the mic and I basically said, you know, whether y'all like it or not, the conservation of our natural resources is highly politically modified, and having a voice that's disconnected, just ever so slightly disconnected from the political gearbox, is a great voice to have for legislators. You know, if y'all can urge and request for an oversight meeting, that would be beneficial. Because I did ask for I found whenever the NOI, I know earlier, Tony, I don't want to rehash it, but you talked about we had a deal. And whenever you said that, you were talking also about redfish, but the we had a deal thing in every connotation that I ever said was about with the menhaden industry, because they had screwed up, put dead fish on Holly Beach. They were going to be pushed back a mile. In walks the governor, changes some commissioners. All of a sudden, the mile becomes a half mile. And we were all told, you know, recreation, y'all be happy with a half mile. Menhaden, y'all be happy with a half mile.
That's what we were told at the meeting.
You don't run any bills if everybody's playing fair. And we went 2 years without a damn thing. That's the we had a deal. And, you know, I was very disappointed on whatever weekend it was, on the Thursday, whenever I found out and I saw the head lobbyist, and I said, please tell me it's not true that y'all pulled the pin on this. Yeah, we pulled the pin on it. So anyway, I went to the meeting that Ty was at. I think Bailey was there as well, November 6th. And said, well, I got my shot. It's an oversight committee meeting, and I put in the formal request to have that oversight committee, and it was rejected. That's the first time in, I don't know what.
That's in, what I can't even find another instance that's been rejected.
It was. That was a very, very large turd that hit into the septic tank that basically made a ripple large enough that despite me pushing and making us a dedicated trip to Baton Rouge, 2-hour drive just to come and talk about WTF on this, it didn't happen. So
Anyway, handle it legislatively. Oh, yeah, right. That's a good answer. But anyway, I'm going to continue to fight. Whether there's Dr. J. Bashan in on the sidelines or not, I'll continue to
listen,
engage.
As long as we don't start talking about hatcheries.
I consider y'all colleagues, friends, you know.
Well,
with
Representative Orgeron, I'll tell you what. I think this was cathartic. I think you know where we stand. We know where you stand. I think I heard that you're backing away from the hatchery stuff. That's music to my ears.
Unless there's something new that says, new development, something else we could try. You know, socialism just doesn't work because it wasn't done right.
Okay.
That's a good analogy. Huh?
Yeah, those hundreds of millions of dead people would, that's right. It's a rock solid analogy, actually. Thank you. Let me take notes on that. Let me write that one down. Hatcheries or socialism. I like it, Representative Orgeron.
They just haven't been done right. That's all.
They haven't.
We're going to do them.
Man, I'm telling you.
I tell you, me wanting to come on the podcast is, the term the revolution eats its own. Like, come on, man, Tony and Ty know I'm fighting this, and here they are, ideological purists, and they're basically bashing me, So whether it's Pol Pot, Stalin, the French Revolution, there's always somebody trying, and then there's a faction that's, it ain't damn good enough.
Who
up with his head?
Who had Representative Orgeron would mention Pol Pot on the bingo card today? I don't know. I did not. That's it. Wow.
Mao Zedong gets the record at 60 million dead.
Yeah.
60 million. That's a pile right there.
Yeah, it is. That is a pile.
There's more redfish than we have, that's for sure.
Well, look, I'm gonna keep fighting. I know we gotta wrap this up, but I'm gonna keep fighting.
Well, I'll be, like I've told you, if you're on the side of conservation, that's gonna improve our fishery. You'll be on the same side as me, and I'll be speaking in favor of you. But if it's against our fishery, then I'll speak against it.
My phone
is always open. Yeah, my phone is always open. Feel free to call me if you have any questions. And like I tell everybody, I keep all the receipts on everything that happens around our fisheries for the past 25 years. And I could tell you just about whatever, whether it's good or bad or what you want to hear. But I see it anecdotally and I see it scientifically.
Thank you. And I'll take that to the bank, bro, because the sun rises in the east. I know you'll be there. Appreciate you.
Yeah, and
we haven't as much interaction, but Tony, anytime, don't hesitate to call me. Let me know.
I tell you what, we always pick up the phone when each other calls. And I hope that continues going forward, man.
Absolutely.
And let us figure out a way to make things better for the people you represent, the people that I represent. And yeah, I'm good. I hope you're good. I hope you had fun. A little bit of fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Bailey, Ty, Representative Orgeron, we're going to close this marathon session out. Y'all hang out for 1 second, and everyone else, we appreciate you listening to the Guidepost, and pretty soon it'll be episode 203, 204, 205, but hope you enjoyed episode 202. We'll catch y'all on here soon.